So we're joined now by local board member Sharon Brown. Good morning, Sharon. How are you? Oops, wrong mic. There you go. How are you?
Oh, hello.
Well, there's many, many things going on with the local board, of course, but what I was interested in talking to you about, Sharon, was the other day you were kind of posting some photos and sharing, and with a degree of excitement, and I think about your participation in a citizenship ceremony. So, I mean, maybe start off with telling us a little bit about, you know, what's the citizenship ceremony and how does a local board member come to be involved?
So, well, obviously a citizenship ceremony is that last stage where people have been battered about for years and years and years, and they finally get to clutch the bit of paper which says that they're a citizen, which has often been very hard fought over with numerous permutations and going back and translating things and, and finding things. I had to find my Persian birth certificate, which my mum had, and then had to be translated, and then I had to provide police certificates from everywhere I've lived, which as an English language teacher is an absolute nightmare. So it is that moment where you get that certificate. And I go to a lot of that kind of ceremony as a university lecturer, people graduation ceremonies, and to be honest, I can't really stand them anymore. And so it was quite interesting for me to finally go to a citizenship ceremony. And exactly what you said, I felt really excited to be there. And it felt like it was the kind of the completion of something. And what a great country is New Zealand, that you can become a citizen and, 8 years later actually be elected to a position where you're in a position of giving other people their citizenship certificates. I mean, I think I was the only one there who was an immigrant, from what I recall. Everyone else was a New Zealander. And then I guess the flip side of that is just seeing the sea of people who want to become citizens, and then feeling, and then we had this kind of Maori performance, kapahaka thing in the middle of it. And I had this kind of sense of, it was quite weird, I had this sense of what it would be like to be, Palestinian, that you've got all these people kind of swamping your country and demanding a place in your space, and then as Maori being reduced to this kind of tokenistic kapahaka thing. So there were a lot of emotions going on for me as I kind of sat there and took all of this on board. When I became a citizen, it was there were a lot of African refugees who were becoming citizens. I remember a lot of Ethiopians and a lot of people in some kind of African dress. This time there seemed to be a lot of Pacific Islanders and a lot of Indian subcontinent people, a few Thai people, a few Afghans, a lot of Europeans. There didn't seem to be that many Chinese people in this particular round, and I think they vary depending on who's coming through.
It's interesting that the process and the ceremony sits with local government. You know, you're becoming a citizen of New Zealand, but yet it's, you know, in this case, Auckland Council who are conducting the process.
And I'm not sure. There seems to be a change in what's happened, because I shook... I can't remember his name, Hubbard's hand. I can't remember his name. Dick Hubbard's
Mayor,
hand,
yeah.
The mayor at the time. And I remember he was in sort of full mayoral regalia, whereas here it was run by the local boards, and it was actually Shale Chambers, who's of Waitemata, who led the whole thing. And everyone was just nicely dressed, but they weren't in council regalia.
Do you have regalia for the local board?
No.
No. Well, that might explain.
Well, we get these really awful heavy leather bags when we first get in.
So you could all stand there with your leather bags over your shoulder, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Have to think about that
so
for next
time. So no chains for the local board chair?
No chains.
You know, around the neck.
Oh, yeah, no chains or those funny Berg hats and cloaks and... It's quite interesting because it's very much the... I grew up in Belgium, and there's a whole thing about the guilds. The Grand Place in Brussels is all about the guild halls. And so that whole mayoral thing always seems slightly strange, because it's like a representation of the guilds, but in the New World, which seems just quite odd.
So what was your role in the proceedings?
Oh, well, it was quite exciting. At one point, I had to hand out certificates. So I got to stand up and sort of hand them out. And then the rest of the time was just clapping and smiling. But interestingly, being from Waiheke, we're related to practically everyone who gets their citizenship. So I got, so if someone I knew, I could stand up. And I think some of the other councillors were a bit like, well, who's that? And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's the doctor at Ostend Medical. We saw him last week. And, oh, yes, that's the person who makes crepes down at Frenchot. So it was quite cool.
Yeah, so it must be nice to see that kind of diversity. But on the other hand, you know, there's, I suppose, a lot of people who are fearful of that kind of diversity and those people coming in.
Mm. Yeah, well, those people, of course, you know, being the diversity.
Yeah.
Yes, and I think, and I wonder if we maybe need to be thinking a bit more about civics. And I mean, it is a huge honour, and I think people are really conscious of that, becoming a New Zealand citizen. Because, for example, you can be born in Japan with foreign-born parents, where, you know, even Korean or at one point, I don't know if it's changed, third-generation Koreans born in Japan could still not be Japanese. I don't know if that's changed. I would assume it has by now, but I don't know. But certainly if you were foreign born in Japan, you couldn't get Japanese citizenship. So it's actually quite incredible that people are allowed to become, you know, so many people are allowed to become New Zealanders. And I think it adds to the diversity, but at the same time, all of that needs to be kind of thought about. And maybe there needs to be better civic education in schools to actually make those connections between people. So there's the notion of tau iwi, people who've come from somewhere else and become New Zealanders, as well as the kind of bicultural Maori aspects of things, and how we can be bicultural and multicultural, and what's the space of those different you know, ways of thinking about ourselves.
I mean, well, Waiheke is a community which has a very diverse population with a high level of new citizens. And, you know, the local board has responsibilities for, you know, development and nurturing of culture and so on. Is that something that the board's given consideration to? How we as a community welcome, integrate and support that kind of diversity and ensuring, you know, that there's not clashes and so on?
I don't think we particularly do. And to be honest, we are 91% white. So a lot of people who come don't necessarily have that many difficulties in adjusting. And then, of course, so that's the one issue. And secondly, I think as a smaller community, because we don't have like a massive group of immigration, we're not, for example, swamped by a Chinese community or an Indian community that's visibly different. The people that come tend to come as family units. So I think it's much, much easier for them to integrate into the society that we have.
I suppose one of the issues that's come up lately, which, you know, and I know when we were in the process of the new board coming in, and the issue of kind of housing and affordable housing was one that was to the fore at that time, is there does seem to be emerging, certainly in the last couple of months, some tensions around the South American community. And in a lot of ways, I mean, that's probably less about them being South American, more about being young and migrant, and migrant workers and young, but being an identifiable group, people tend to gravitate towards that kind of descriptor. So, I mean, it's an issue that hasn't really progressed, isn't it? That one of affordable housing and how we deal with as a community with now having a large migrant workforce.
Absolutely. And that's the whole thing of, and again, it's not clear what the local board can do. I mean, essentially, we live in a market-driven economy around housing, so there is no rent control. In Europe, there are a lot of places, first of all, lots of people rent. It's not seen as being something that the poor and disenfranchised do. People just rent. And it's not seen as a you know, real letdown for people to live in an apartment. People do. Families live in apartments. It's okay. The other thing is that there are rent controls, so you can't raise the rent by more than 2 or 3% over the year before. You can't, whereas here you can raise it by 20%, 30%. Even in the last 3 years, you could get rent of a 2 or 3 bedroom house for $300. Now you'd be more looking more, if you were very lucky, at $450, $500. Well, that's, you know, that's what, 2/3 more? So it's quite significantly more. In terms of the thing that you were saying, South Americans, well, you know, to be honest, the English, when they travel, I mean, I know that from being in Europe, when they travel in packs, they're absolutely hideous. And I think you're right. I think it's the phenomenon of young people traveling in packs, speaking a foreign language, that gets up the locals, that gets on the locals' nerves to a degree. So So it's that thing of, you know, them maybe being a bit less kind of boisterous and noisy and out there and whatever, and us being a bit more tolerant of them. So, yeah.
I mean, this issue of how we accommodate a migrant workforce isn't one that's going to go away. I mean, you know, perhaps people can put it at the back of their minds over winter, but it's going to come to the fore again next summer. And, you know, so yes, the local board doesn't have influence over, you know, over rents or you know, but there may be some issues around, say, the discussions with business around how they provide for the workers that they're reliant on, the, you know, the, some of the resources for if there are proposals around housing developments that would be suitable and so on. So what do you envisage work going on in that area?
Well, again, I mean, what happens, I mean, we'd love to talk to the businesses, and we do occasionally, but basically it's seen as being not something that the local board has any jurisdiction on in terms of business. What's happening is that businesses who need workers and find that they can't get them are now starting to think that maybe they actually need to step up and provide some accommodation for the workers. And that's certainly happening down at Man of War Bay and I think some other places. I think the school at one point was also investigating opportunities for renting houses or creating, making, I don't know if that got very far, but there was at one point a discussion around maybe creating some, making land available for housing for teachers. But it is a real problem. And if you get on the 8 o'clock ferry, you get overwhelmed by a sea of people coming the other way, whether they're labourers, nurses, teachers, servicing the local industry.
Has the local board been playing a role in trying to get the Kenna Backpackers reopened?
Oh, God. Yes. I mean, and you know, there's been a, I mean, I think that's been a real example of the failure of council process, because that we knew that that was becoming available last June. And then we had a meeting about it in about, I don't know, I can't remember, June, July. And then they went away. And then 2 months later, they said there's a problem with the reserves. The way it's designated as a reserve. So that needs to change. And then 2 months later, they said, oh, well, there's a problem with the septic. And it's this thing of, like, you know, we're a holiday destination. We were saying how important this is for this place to have a contract allocated by September at the very, very latest. And here we are a year later, you know, whatever, not a year later, but, considerable number of months later, after the summer season, still with the backpackers closed. So I don't think it's almost like it's hard when people have a sea of things to do in their portfolio and job roles change all the time, for people to hold on to the bigger picture of this is really important for Waiheke and needs to be sorted out. So I don't think it's anything particular that's led to it, but it's almost like a lack of care or seeing that it was a really important thing that needed to be focused on.
So what happens now then? I mean, we've got, you know, as we say, we're kind of entering the winter respite. How does the board push to get this
Well,
sorted?
Basically it's managed by Panuku. So that's Development Auckland. And so we just send them emails and demand things and encourage them, jolly them along and hope for the best. And yeah, so I think they have had an expression of interest from a number of providers. The problem with that is the people express an interest and then 9 months later their lives might have moved on, so that expression of interest may no longer be valid. So, yeah, so I do think it's a real shame that we haven't been able to move faster on that project. And I have to say it's not for lack of pushing from the board, because I think Paul sends emails, I send emails. When we see people, we say, right, so we've got a plan, and then it goes away and disappears into a bottomless pit again.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for coming in, Sharon.
Lovely. Can I just say one more thing?
Mm.
So next week, as you all know, Waiheke is now TPPA free. And next week, the submissions close to the select committee that's working on that in government. So it's a good time to get a submission in if you have any concerns around being a small business, issues around loss of sovereignty, even if you basically support some of the free trade issues around it, but still have concerns of other things like investor trade disputes, then it's a good time to get some submissions in. The other thing is that on Monday I'm going to the junket, which is the MFAT, so the Ministry of Foreign Trade and Enterprise, and hearing what they have to say about it and raising some questions around intellectual property.
Excellent.
So, thank you.
Okay, so Sharon Brown from the Waiheke Local Board, thank you very much.
Lovely. Thanks.